And we welcome you to another edition of Giants First and 10 here on MSG. Over the next hour, we'll get you set for the Giants and Seahawks. I'm Bob Papa, joined as always by our Hall of Fame captain, Harry Carson, two-time Super Bowl champion, Carl Banks, and our protector, Super Bowl champion, Roman Oben. We are getting set for the Giants and the Seattle Seahawks. Let's take a look at what's coming up on the program today. We'll hear from Giants head coach Tom Coughlin. He'll join us in studio. Carl Banks will go to the coach's tape with strategy. We'll have Anita Marks in for the blitz and some spirited conversation today. And Odell Beckham Jr. will join us in studio. But to get things started, we always get the show started with our no huddle. We put 25 seconds on the clock. And I have a question for each of our panelists this week, with the Giants now having lost three in a row. And Harry?
I'm in trouble already. Yeah. It won't be 25 seconds.
All right. Go ahead. Your question is a question.
Well, the question I have for these guys is one I used to ask myself. During the early days of the Giants, back in the 70s when they were really, really bad, it was very frustrating to go out and play and then, you know, lose 44-7 or whatever. So I asked myself, did I do everything that I can do to help my team win? And if the answer is yes, then it's out of my hands. And I'd go home and I'd have a nice, restful rest. But if the answer was no, then I would toss and turn for a couple of days, you know, waiting for an opportunity to redeem myself. And I think this is one of those times where these guys have to ask themselves, are they doing everything that they can do to help this team win, both on the field but also off the field? That's why I said I'm in trouble.
See, he went over. He went over, but that's okay because that was a very good
rip. That's a captain's prerogative.
Okay, 25 seconds on the clock for you, Mr. Banks. Rodney Dangerfield, how does he fit in?
Well, don't be Rodney Dangerfield. Fight for your respect. I think at this stage of the season and the way the team is playing up front, no one's respecting them, so they've got to fight for their respect.
All right, Carl keeps it in tight. Roman, 25 seconds on the clock go to you, and you say get the engine running a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are up. This team hasn't started fast offensively in a year and a half. And to punt 5 out of 6 times last week wasn't good enough. But on the road in Seattle, in that environment, if you don't figure out a way to put your best foot forward the first 10 plays and set the tempo, you'll be punting again from your end zone with the crowd noise, all these other things that will happen as a result of that. You have to find a way to start fast.
All right, and a false start we saw like in 2005 or 6 when the Giants had 12 of them. They're going to Seattle. Later on in the program, we're going to talk about the 12th man factor and how loud it is in Seattle. But I want to get back to what you said, Harry. Look yourself in the mirror. Did I do all that I can do? That also means a player has to be honest with himself, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you have to go out there and you have to lay it on the line for your teammates. And I don't necessarily know if these guys are doing that. I don't know if they are built that way. I know, you know, we are. I know Carl is. I know Roman is. But you have to be accountable. And, you know, these guys, they may be just taking the field and going out and playing. And I understand, you know, there are injuries that are mounting up now. But the rest of these guys, you know, you're going to have to circle the wagons and find some way to win. We got 8 games left.
Yeah.
How are we going to finish out this football season? And it was key what you said. They are not going to be respected until they go out and earn the respect of teams they face.
Yeah, and I think right now they've got to lose the mentality of a bad play turning into a bad day. They just can't allow that mentality to set in. And it starts to snowball the opposite direction, but success works the other way, too.
I mean, it doesn't matter who's the coordinator, who's calling the plays, what the play called, what's the philosophy. It's the 11 guys in the huddle saying, we're going to make this work no matter what. Cruz isn't there. Guys are injured. That's fine. Make it work no matter what.
Yeah, because they changed the offense. They changed it. They brought in a new offensive coordinator. They brought in some new position coaches. Yet the results in the running game are the same as they were last year. And you mentioned the fast start. How do you get a team to start faster, guys? I mean, the Giants haven't scored an opening possession touchdown in 19 consecutive games.
Try the little things. Try converting a third down. Try, after having a positive play, not being offsides or not having a delay of game. That's how you start fast. You start to build one at a time on your successes.
For every play, you give it 100%. and you just let it all hang out as if you're not going to play for the end of the game. You just lay it all out there, and you just go after people, and you set the tempo as to how the day is going to go.
There's a mantra for offensive linemen. It's, you know, move your man from point A to B against his will, consistently over time, and in the fourth quarter, you impose your will on your opponent. You haven't seen that imposition of a will on the other team's opponent.
All right, we are just getting started here on Giants First and 10. Let's take a look at the airings of Giants First and 10 throughout the course of the weekend to get you set for the Giants and Seahawks in Seattle. Two airings, of course, on Friday, then Saturday. Three airings starting at 10 a.m. in the morning, and then Sunday morning, set your day with us starting at 6 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. on MSG. We're going to take a timeout when we come back on the program. Giants head coach Tom Coughlin joins us as we continue with Giants First and 10 here on MSG. Welcome back to Giants First and 10 here on MSG. On Sunday afternoon, the Giants travel to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. Item number two on our show is always the head coach of the New York Giants, Tom Coughlin. And coach, obviously a tremendous set of challenges going to Seattle to take on this Seahawks team with the noise in that building and the way they play defense. What are some of the points that you stressed to your team this week?
Well, you start out with the idea that you are going into a loud, hostile environment, which we've been there before. A lot of these people on this team have not been there with us in those situations, but you do prepare them for it. You have the loud noise at practice, and you try to make it such that they can't even hear themselves think, that everybody has to communicate in a nonverbal way, and that's what you're up against.
Coach, now the record is what it is, and I'm sure after every game you look and you see where there are opportunities that could have been made, and now you have to deal with injuries, which puts more of a emphasis on doing little things and making the play that could have kept the drive going or an interception that could have turned the ball over. How does the practices go now? Because you have what you have as a roster, but what are the points of emphasis now?
Well, you go back, first of all, Carl, when you're talking about last week's game, you can easily look at 21 points that was – you know, first you have to keep from beating yourself before you can attempt to go ahead and beat the opponent. And we have, even at this point, eight games into the season, we've managed to give things away, certainly 14 points. I mean, we had two different situations and different scenarios. We got the fumble where, you know, we get beat around the edge, which, you know, just technically should not happen. Ball comes out, they run it inside the five. We go up in the air to make an interception, a sure interception. We leave the ground a little early, so therefore we're kind of hanging there when the ball comes down and the receiver rips it away. So instead of that, it's another touchdown. And then the challenge situation, the situation where, you know, after a big play, they rush up to the ball and hurry off. And for whatever reason, having practiced it, our players are looking to the sideline or to the officials as if they're going to do something. Players play the game, coaches coach the game, officials officiate the game. Line up like you're supposed to. Don't worry about what someone else is doing, and let's play the play. Let's get ourselves organized to play the play as we've practiced it. So there, in my opinion, are 21 points right off the bat. So you're right in one respect is, when are we going to realize that every play is critical? And when you have the opportunity, you have to make the play. The drop inside the five-yard line, you know, very early in the game. We catch that ball, we're going to have a touchdown. It's going to be 10 or 16 to 10 or whatever the score is, even under that circumstance. So, you know, lots of messages, lots of teaching. But understand that the players have to understand that what I want is improvement. Even at this point of the season, improvement. We still have an opportunity. We have eight games to play. We know exactly what we want to do. It's got to be conveyed better, obviously, to the players. They got to stop the mental errors. We got to stop looking a gift horse in the mouth. We had three fumbles laying on the ground. We didn't get any. Three opportunities for interceptions, none. So what we've got to do is begin to make the plays that we talk about. It's about execution. It's not about rah, 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 rah. We have plenty of that. It's the execution. We played hard, but nevertheless, the next thing is execution.
And, Coach, is part of that, too, like what we saw in the game the other night, and even during these games that you've lost, where you'll make a play, you'll get a first down, then you get a procedural penalty. Instead of first and 10, you're on schedule. Now it's first and 15. Those
little
things.
Yeah, but we only had four penalties the other night. Yes, that's naturally, you want none. You'd like to have none. But I think we had five, and one of them was an offset, and I think they had the same, 4-4. So, yeah, we don't want any penalties at all. We discourage it. We don't want it. We practice. Otherwise, it happens. You got to deal with it. All right, so it's 1st and 15. Make a play. Let's go. Make a play and get a first down.
You got another one?
That kind of shuts everybody
you
up
got
right
it.
There.
Yeah. You got it. There's nothing else to be said.
All right.
Make a play. That's
Make
the
play.
Thing.
That Execute. Yeah. Execute. Pro football. All right? Be an athlete. Have confidence in yourself. Play the game. Get on the field. Stick to the game in hand. Manage and control the game the way you've been prepared. Let's go.
You got any eligibility left? Because I'm fired up.
I'm ready to go.
He could put it on. He should have done it the other night.
Thank you, Coach. Good luck
Thanks,
this
Coach.
Week. That's New York Giants head coach Tom Coughlin. Now, what we do every week is we take what Coach talks about. Carl likes to go to the coach's tape and illustrate things for you with strategy. Item number 3, strategy with Carl Banks.
When you look at the Seattle offense, the key to making it work, obviously, is Russell Wilson. It's designed to get the ball out of his hands. So, when you have man-to-man coverage, as you'll see here, every guy is in man coverage at the bottom, and it appears that there's man coverage here on the tight end. Man coverage, man coverage, man coverage. Now, you have a guy who stayed in and blocked. Now he's releasing late. These two men have a bracket coverage on the tight end. Their eyes are here, here, looking at the quarterback. Instead of following their man, ball's out, quarterback's resourceful, first down. When you're in man-to-man coverage, do your job and everything else will take care of itself. Let's take a look now at the Seattle defense. They don't have a lot of sacks on the year, but if you do not communicate with your offensive linemen, you're going to have some problems blocking. Let's take a look. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 potential rushers. These men across the front line will have to communicate so that when things happen, like twists, you'll see here, they bring 3 off of one side. I'll freeze it. The back should be seeing his vision here because you have 3, 1, 2, 3 defenders, and you've only got 2 to block them. So nothing comes from this side. The back automatically takes his vision over so that he can help out. And because this back doesn't, there's a sack on the quarterback. So communication, especially in a hostile environment, is very crucial among the offensive linemen.
That was Strategy with Carl Banks, brought to you by PSE&G. PSE&G, we make things work for you. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back here on the program, we sent Paul Dottino into the Giants locker room. We'll find out what he was able to unearth as we continue with Giants 1st and 10 here on MSG. Back here on Giants 1st and 10 as we get you set for the Giants and Seahawks on Sunday in Seattle. What we like to do each and every week is inquire in the Giants locker room how the Giants can best about go about winning the games. And who better to do the reporting on that than our own Paul Dottino. Item number 4, Paul, goes up on the board. How do the Giants deal with the Seahawks offense?
Yeah, well, you know, it starts with stopping that running game, guys, because this is a different two-headed monster. You've got a running quarterback and a running back, not two running backs. In fact, Russell Wilson has nearly 400 yards rushing this year. That is the number one quarterback total in the NFL. The Giants know that it's all about making sure you're clean on D if you're going to stop them.
For years, you've seen him, you know, hitting 1-2 guys and still breaking out of the pile. So we definitely understand it's going to take 2 and 3 guys to get in there and secure the tackle and make sure that everybody's still driving their feet because he is a talented runner.
You got to be disciplined. You know, we play very well, so I'm pretty sure it's not going to be a big problem for us. You know, we play teams that do read options or whatever, too. So
why do you think you play it well?
I don't know. Our D coordinator, Fairfield, you know what I mean? He puts in a good game plan for it. So, you know, and, you know, like I said, it's gonna be all about execution. And if we do it well, and all of us got to do our jobs, you know. You know, everybody got to step up. You know, we got mans down, but a lot of injuries or whatever, but that's no excuse. You know, the next man got to be ready to step up and do the next man job. And, you know, I'm pretty sure we got a lot of talent on this team, so we'll be okay.
Now, Lynch is only averaging about 4.2 yards a carry, which is kind of low for a superstar back. But, you know, the bottom line is, fellas, you don't know sometimes if he's got the ball or if Wilson's got the ball. So, Carl, what are you looking for?
Well, you go to the running back first. You assume he has it. But it really comes down to your responsibilities. The guy that has contained must see the quarterback. The guys on the inside of the defense, they've got to play the running back.
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, lane integrity, gap integrity defensively, you've got to tackle Marshawn Lynch. You've got to force Russell Willis into these long third down situations because I think Doug Baldwin is really all they have at the receiver position. He's become their number one guy, not typically considered a number one receiver.
Sure.
Yeah, so those are some of the real stress points for the Giants. All right, let's go to the other side of the ball. Item number five, the Giant offense has struggled. They're going against the Legion of Boom in Seattle, the 12th man. What were they saying about that?
Yeah, that's a tough deal, Bob. Everybody knows if you get behind on these guys and you're in third and long or you get behind in the game, that 12th man really helps the Legion of Boom in that secondary. Tough to throw against them. You know, they've had some nicks and bumps and bruises back there, but Eli Manning says that's still a quality bunch.
It's a lot of the same secondary. I mean, they've had some injuries and some different guys get hurt a little bit at corner and at safety, you know, rotating some different guys. But, you know, still very, very talented in their secondary. You know, they still get, you know, seem to be able to get a good pass rush. And so, you know, we got to, you know, for us to be successful as an offense, everybody's got to do their job. Offense linemen have to play great and keep a good front four from getting pressure. And receivers got to get open and beat a lot of man-to-man coverage.
Now, the interesting part is despite the fact that they hit hard and they make a lot of plays, they've only got 5 picks so far in the season, ranks 22nd in the NFL. So maybe they're not making the big play, Roman.
Well, if you look at the games that they lost, you look at Dallas specifically and even the San Diego game, they ran the ball well and they attacked those soft spots in those zones and they methodically moved the ball downfield. And that's what quieted the crowd and that's what not allowed them to really take bigger shots because they didn't have to. So maybe the Giants can pull some of that in this new West Coast offense.
Yeah, and that's a little bit of an insight as to how you neutralize a ball-hawking secondary, keep them out of third and long situations. Run the football, stay in manageable down and distance situations.
Carl, is it reckless to run some plays at Richard Sherman? Green Bay didn't do it opening night, but we've seen other teams play against Seattle and at least make them work a little bit.
Well, you have to. I mean, but you can't be reckless with the football when you go plays at him. You've got to make sure the receiver and quarterback are on the same page. Make him compete, sure.
Paul, great stuff as always.
Good to see you guys.
That's Paul Dottino working the Giants locker room for us here on Giants First and 10. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, some great questions this week in the Blitz with Anita Marks as we continue with Giants First and 10 here on MSG after this. Welcome back to Giants First and 10 here on MSG. 10 things to get you set for the Giants and Seahawks. Still to come on the program, Odell Beckham Jr. will join us in studio. You don't want to miss that. We have our online segment with Paul Schwartz of the New York Post and Patricia Traynor. We'll also take a look at the 12th man factor in Seattle. And, of course, we'll have our big blue challenge. But it is time to put item number 6 on the board. We call this the Blitz, and we welcome in Anita Marks.
All right, guys, I've got some great questions for you to debate. Here we go. As the Seattle Seahawks try to defend their Super Bowl title, first half of the season, they're sitting at 5-3. The NFL has not had a repeat champion in back-to-back years since the Patriots did it back in 2004-2005. Only accomplished 8 times in our Super Bowl era. So here's your question. Which is the toughest professional sport to repeat as champions the following year? 60 seconds on the clock and discuss.
I think football is. I think football is still the hardest sport to repeat in, especially in an era of free agency and injury. You know, injury always occurs, but when you can build your roster and keep it for a while, you can overcome that. But when you have free agency, people pick and choose from your best players.
Yeah, I agree with Carl. It is so difficult to win a championship and then be in a position to repeat because as soon as you beat somebody the previous year, they are getting ready for you the next year. And so they can find out what your weaknesses are. And when they play you, like, you know, with the case of Seattle, you know, the Giants played them last year. They found some things against Seattle that they could probably use. I know other teams have also done that, Dallas as well. You know, there are no secrets out there. You have to go out and execute. And again, with free agency, when people block your players, it takes away from the continuity of the team.
The buzzer went off.
I'm going to get one quick point.
Okay, go ahead. I'll let you.
The other thing is about football, why it's tougher, is because it's one game throughout the postseason. So one game elimination. In all the other sports, you have a series where usually the better team over the span of a seven-game series can win. But one day, anything can happen.
All right, here we go. Question number two. After playing Andrew Luck and the Colts last week, the Giants face yet another quarterback from the 2012 NFL draft class in Russell Wilson. Now, their class also includes RG3, Ryan Tannehill, and Nick Foles, where Eli's draft class, 2004, includes Ben Roethlisberger and Philip Rivers. Here's your question. Which will go down as the better quarterback draft class, 2012 or 2004? Another 60 seconds. You want to lead us off, Harry?
Well, I think Andrew Luck is certainly establishing himself as someone who's really going to be good in the National Football League. But right now, I think I have to go with, you know, the older groups with Roethlisberger and Rivers, even though he has not won a championship, but Eli's won two. And so far, those guys look like they're, you know, a little better than this latest class.
Yeah, Eli's won two, Ben has won two.
Yeah, and Philip Rivers has had a ton of success when you look at his individual stats. And when you look at this 2012 class, you're going to see one guy that stands out, and then the rest of the guys we don't know about yet. So I think a body of work collectively, it's the 2004 group.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard question to answer because these guys are only in their third year. I mean, if you pose this question about the class of 04, you'd be talking about, you know, the 2006 season. But I'm going to say the 04 class because you mentioned the four Super Bowls, plus they've been the five total.
Here we go. Your last and final question. On Sunday, Eli will surpass Phil Sims, 159 straight starts for a Giants quarterback in franchise history. Here's your question. What was the defining moment in each of their careers where you sat back and realized they were special and they would lead their teams to championships? I want one defining moment for each. 60 seconds on the clock.
I'd say for me, it was the 1984 training camp where he had to literally fight for his job. He was at a career crossroads coming off an injury, and I think he showed from that moment
on. Phil Sims.
Yes, Phil Sims.
For me, it's probably, Super Bowl 21. You know, I saw a lot of ups and downs with Phil, and he really didn't solidify himself with me until he had that outstanding performance.
What about Eli Manning?
Oh, you want me to go first with Eli?
Go ahead.
I'll go first. I say
constantly get
2006
buzzed.
In Philadelphia in September. He sacked eight times in the first half, gets off the mat, leads the team to a comeback victory in overtime with a touchdown pass to Plaxico Burress. I said this guy's got the toughness to go along with the skill.
Well, I think his fourth quarters, especially the one against Denver, is the one that told me he's a keeper.
I have to agree with Carl. That was outstanding players about him, and he has really done some great.
You got buzzed.
I guess I'm buzzed.
I'm sorry.
But great stuff, guys, and fun questions. Thank you.
All right, let's take a look at all the Giants programming that comes your way each and every week. Giants First and 10 debuts every Friday night at 5 p.m. on MSG+. Saturday night, you don't want to miss Giants Access Blue at 11 p.m. on My9. Then Sunday morning, start your day with Giants Chronicles on MSG at 10 a.m. This week, history of the Giants offensive line. Post-game live right after the Giants and Seahawks on My9. Tuesday night on MSG Plus, Giants Rewind at 6. And then on Wednesday, it's Giants Press Conference Live at 11 a.m. on MSG. We're going to take a timeout on the program. When we come back, one of the bright spots, rookie Odell Beckham Jr. joins us in studio after this here on Giants First and 10.
He's a phenomenal athlete. He really is. We loved him in through the evaluation process. Extraordinary speed. Just natural catching ability, really explosive in the kicking game. He's a really terrific returner. you know, and he wasn't even featured so much in college, you know, and you could see all of that. There's nothing to hold this guy back from being a great player, I think. And he's got a great mentality and demeanor, and, you know, I mean, he's just got everything going for him. And, I mean, unfortunately, he was banged up, but, you know, he's really coming into it right now.
That's Seattle head coach Pete Carroll talking about Odell Beckham Jr., the Giants rookie wide receiver. As we welcome you back to Giants First and 10 here on MSG, getting you set for the Giants and Seahawks. It's been an impressive start for the rookie out of LSU.
Play fake to Jennings, manning the throw. Zips one off on the right, and that's Odell Beckham Jr., who makes his first career catch. Zips one left. Odell Beckham Jr. snatches it out of the air.
That's the explosive play that they're looking for.
You know, it's been since I was maybe 3 years old, you know, I've been playing. You know, my mom and my dad were both athletes. My mom was a, you know, 12-time All-American in track. And you know, my dad played football, and I just genetically inherited, you know, these abilities that I have, and this passion and this drive for the game is just something that, you know, all credit to them.
Falcons show blitz. They bring pressure. Manning back. He throws one left into the end zone. Jump ball. Touchdown. Giants. Odell Beckham Jr.
That's a heck of a play by Odell Beckham. Eli puts it high. He high points it and just out jumps the defender.
This is really the love of my life. Like, there's nothing else I'd rather be doing than this. So to be able to get to this level and have an opportunity to play is just, you know, an exciting feeling for me.
And it's time for item number 7 in our 10 things you need to know about the Giants and Seahawks. And Odell Beckham Jr. joins us here in studio. First of all, thanks for a couple of minutes. How are you?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. How'd your mom do in the marathon? I know she ran the New York City Marathon last week.
She did all right. Her first marathon, she ran in 4 hours and 22 minutes. So she was pretty proud of herself, you know, for finishing the race. And I actually had the little app tracker. You could track and see how far they are. And she started at mile 18. She just started rolling. And I didn't know if I was even going to make it to see her finish. And, you know, I ended up getting there just in time to, you know, watch her as she's coming out.
Wow, that's incredible. And, you know, you have a track background. You obviously, you talk about your parents, but you had a little bit of a setback in training camp, and your road to the field was, you know, staggered a little bit. Talk a little bit about the hamstring that you had to deal with. And being a track guy, you guys have more sensitivity to your hamstring injuries than most. Talk about that a little bit.
It was just such a hard process to go through when, you know, all you want to do is you want to get out here and, you know, you finally get to where you've always wanted to be in life, something you've been chasing for as long as I can remember. And you finally get here and you're set back with something like that. And then, you know, you start to question why is this happening now? And, you know, it was kind of just a moment in my life where I had to, you know, take another step back and draw closer to God and just know that, you know, he would never put you through anything you couldn't handle. So it was just a whirlwind of emotions, just because I don't think people knew and understood fully how bad I wanted to be on the field.
I'm familiar with your college offensive coordinator, Cam Cameron, when I was in San Diego. And a lot of things that were said about you coming out were that you were NFL ready as a receiver. What are some of the things that you did coming out, or even just your confidence that enabled you to be performing at a high level, even missing all that time?
I think it had a lot to do with the confidence and just the school I was at and the preparation that they gave me there, the situations and things I went through. It just made me strong, and I knew that this wasn't going to break me. You know, as hard as it was sometimes, I've been through worse.
From a percentage standpoint, where do you think you are in terms of realizing your potential just for this year? What do you think you are?
I have no idea, but I feel as if, you know, once I master some of these little things that I'm seeing, and I know there are things I need to correct, but it's so hard to correct them, you know, right then and there during the season. It's one of those things where, you know, next year I think things will slow down a lot more. So right now I'm trying to learn the game, and I'm trying to make sure I have all the playbook down and make sure I'm doing all the right plays and just play as fast as you can and play with confidence, and, you know, I think that I'll be all right.
You've gotten better, it seems like, every week since that Atlanta game, and now you look at this defensive secondary to Seattle, Richard Sherman, Chancellor, all these guys. I mean, what challenges do they pose? What do you see from them on film?
I mean, it's the Seahawks, defending champs. but it's why not? Why would you not want to go against the best? You know, this is what you've worked all your life to get here for. This, to me, it's that LSU Bama game. It's why would you not want to play in those and go against the Richard Sherman, the Earl Thomas, Chancellors, and you know those guys. It's just for me, you know, it's a challenge for sure, but it's one that I'm willing to accept.
All right, final question. You went to the same high school as Eli Manning and Peyton Manning. Eli tells a story about how he and Peyton were back throwing, and they asked the coach to, you know, hey, can you get some receivers to throw? And he's expecting the typical Isidore Newman receivers to show up, and then you show up. What was that encounter like, getting a chance to catch balls from Eli and Peyton when you're just a high schooler?
I remember that opportunity I had to throw with those guys for the first time, and it's just, you're there as a young guy, and you're just like, you know, I'm throwing with, you know, Eli and Peyton Manning, and I remember running a post, and I remember running both posts with both of them, and I stick, and I look up after three steps, and the ball's, you know, in my hands. Like, you don't even have to do much. they're just that good, and I remember I was like, there's no way that it could really be like that. You know, you just run your route, and they're going to throw it to you, and, you know, sure enough, that's exactly what it's like.
Well, we appreciate a couple minutes. Good luck on Sunday, and continued success here in this first season.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Odell Beckham Jr. joining us here on the program. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, Pat Hanlon joins us for our online segment. Paul Schwartz of the New York Post and Patricia Traynor of Inside Pro Football will join us as we continue with Giants First and 10 here on MSG. Welcome back to Giants First and 10 as we get you set for the Giants and Seahawks on Sunday. And it's time to put item number 8 up on the board. This is our online segment. To help me moderate it, the Senior VP of Communications, Pat Hanlon. How you doing there, Patty?
I'm going to do a lot of listening right now.
A lot of listening?
Yeah, there ain't a whole lot to say.
I bet you'll find a way to chime in. We have Patricia Traynor of Inside Pro Football and the Bleacher Report, Paul Schwartz of the New York Post. And I guess the first area of conversation here is the line issues that the Giants are having as far as being able to run the football and not getting any production.
The run blocking for the Giants the last few weeks just hasn't been good. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. Now this week, they're potentially facing a change in personnel. Weston Richburg can't play. Adam Snyder probably will get the nod. He finished up for him. But then again, it's not all on the offensive line. You've got a rookie running back, Andre Williams, who's going to be very good one day. But right now, patience, he lacks that. He's not hitting the holes. He's leaving a lot of yards.
I think we already established. There aren't any holes.
There aren't any holes, but there are creases, and he's got to hit them.
And let's not forget, but the offensive line was the same offensive line with Rashad Jennings in there, and he was able to find some room to run. So I agree with you. The line has not been good. It's regressed. I mean, they had three pretty good games in a row, but the line is not good. The rookie running back is not ready to be a lead, you know, bell cow here at all. So, yeah, I mean, going into Seattle and thinking you're not going to be able to run the ball is an incredible recipe for disaster.
Your first running play can't be a three-yard loss. That's what I'm saying. That's where you set the tone. We say it every week. You set the tone with the fronts. Right?
Right, you do. But the problem is, couple that with the tight ends and their shaky blocking. And I feel bad for Coach Coughlin and Ben McAdoo because they're trying to set that tone, and then it goes back 3 yards. Then what do you do from there?
Look, Pat, there's no easy answers here. There just aren't.
But wait a second. There really is. You run a play on third down, and the receiver drops the ball that hits him right in the hands. They can't afford to do this. They don't have receivers that can make yards after catch that fit the West Coast offense outside of Odell Beckham.
When the head coach pleads with his team, play above the X's and O's, which to me means do something that we don't expect you to do. You know, a 4-yard gain. Yes, it is.
Do something that we expect you to do.
No.
It's like Bob said, on third down, when the ball hits you in the chest, catch it.
When you have a chance to intercept
Andrew Luck 3 times, catch it.
No, throwing the ball
just
and catching
give me that.
Is just playing to the X's and O's. What Tom was saying is, if we throw a swing pass for 4 yards, how about instead of getting the 4 yards, breaking a tackle and going for 30, that kind of thing.
Well, the glaring example.
Oh, that's above the X's and O's.
That's above it.
Unfortunately, the horrible example is what T.Y. Hilton did.
Yeah.
Because Dominic Rogers-Cromartie set Luck up to throw that ball. He purposely fell to the outside and trailed to bait him to throw the ball so he could get an interception, which would have been huge at 16-3 to start the third quarter.
Huge.
Okay? And instead,
T.Y. Hilton played above the X's and O's and stole a touchdown.
It comes down to what Tom Coughlin preached last year and the year before that. Finish. And that's what they didn't do often against the Colts.
That's the problem.
Look, when your best cornerback, you know, arguably, you know, with Prince being out, is in position to make a play and some scrawny, good, but scrawny little receiver takes it away from him, that's also not playing to the X's and O's either.
Well, at this point, forget that's about true. Above the X's and O's. I think the coach would just take the X's and O's at this point.
Just an X or an O, one of the two.
Your prediction for this week.
Oh, gosh. I'd like to give Giant fans something to smile about, but I just can't. I'm going to say, let's go 27-13.
I mean, I'm not going to, I don't know, 27-10, something like that. I don't see a victory at all.
It's like Eli said, there are plays to be made. Just make them, please.
And with that said, that ends this segment. We thank Patricia, Paul, and Pat for joining us in our online segment. When we come back on the program, we'll look at the 12th man plus our Big Blue Challenge. We continue with Giants First and 10 here on MSG after this.
That's a captain's prerogative.
That kind of shuts everybody
up
right there.
You got any eligibility left? Because I'm fired up.
I'm ready to go.
He could put it on. He should have done it the other night.
How you doing there, Patty?
I'm going to do a lot of listening right now.
That's the Geico Show recap. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com. As we welcome you back to Giants First and 10 here on MSG Sunday, it's the Giants and Seahawks in Seattle. So item number 9 goes up on the board, and it's Seattle's 12th man. Guys, obviously this is a decided home field advantage for the Seahawks. They even have a flag for it. It really creates all kinds of issues for opposing teams if you don't play well, does it, Harry?
Well, the important thing for any team going into Seattle is they have to remain disciplined, focus, and concentrate on what they have to do. You should not have, you know, just because of crowd noise, guys jumping offside or, you know, any kind of mental errors. That, you know, that's part of being a football player. You have to be disciplined.
Yeah, especially an offensive line that struggled. I mean, we've seen offside penalties at home.
Sure.
And so, again, you get backed up in your end zone. I mean, that crowd noise with the aluminum coverings over the field, I mean, that really makes the stadium, like, literally 10 times louder than most dome stadiums.
And I think both of these guys said it best. You just can't create your own anxiety moments. Like, if you focus on doing the little things right and not having those miscues, the crowd won't be as big of a factor.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas went in there. And ran. I mean, Dallas gave up a block punt for a touchdown. They had a turnover. But they went in there, and they ran it down their throats, and they were always in second and three. Well, the crowd noise isn't a factor because you can just turn around, hand off, pick up another first down, and then throw on first down. They're not loud. Talk about how important, though, home crowd is. I mean, you guys played. You won a Super Bowl in 86. Giant Stadium used to sway. Did you feel that was a part of your team, a 12th man for that Giant defense?
You know, it helps when it's helping you. But, you know, for the most part, you have to still go out and play the game. I mean, but so much the crowd can do. I mean, they can rally behind you and encourage you. So, and when the other team has the ball, you know, rattle the other team. But for the most part, you're just going to have to go out and play.
12th man does make a difference. I can tell you that. If you just got a big play on your defense and you're mad as hell and they're at the goal line and you got to stop them three times and force a field goal and that crowd gets into it. Now, you're already mad, but when that crowd gets into it, it just makes it each down, you just feed on the adrenaline.
Now, Roman, I want to ask you the other way because you're the guy that's had to go off the silent counts. Right. And all that other stuff, and deal with the noise that the Giants are going to face in Seattle.
Right.
What are some of the most critical things that they're going to have to do? And explain to the fans what silent count even means.
Well, I think silent count, you've seen certain instances where the guard will look back at the quarterback, then tap the center when he's ready. And as an offensive lineman, you've got to look down at the ground and your peripheral vision. And as soon as you see that ball snap, then you've got to move. So you can't rock. You can't anticipate. In the old days, in this picture, we used to hold hands. Greg Bishop, I'd have to hold his hand, so my hand would start trembling. Like, when are you going to snap? Sometimes I'd jump and make him go offside. But especially as a young tackle, You know, Beanie's not so young, but Pugh, I mean, he's a second-year guy. I mean, he hasn't been in that environment before. It's going to be a challenge.
As we do each and every week, it's our final item we put up on the board. Item number 10 goes up, which is our Big Blue Challenge. Every week, I ask a question of my esteemed panelists. I'm the judge and the jury. So,
and the executioner.
Yes, and the executioner. So it is time to deliver the grades from last week before we get to this week's question.
Ouch. Ouch.
All right,
ouch.
So here's what we got going, fellas. So the question was, what area did the Giants have to dominate in last week? What did they need to do to dominate in order to win the football game? So, Harry, I'm going to start with you.
Oh.
Harry's selection, where the Giants had to dominate, was they needed to dominate on defense. Okay, they gave up 40 points in the game. But I will say this. In the first half, when the Giants were punting from their own 5-yard line and the Colts were getting great field position, starting at their own 40, they got a good punt return. The Giants were holding them to field goals the entire way. Mm-hmm. It was still only 16-3 at the half, and the only touchdown was on a busted play. So they did dominate on defense for some of the game. So with that said, Harry, since they were not completely, I will give you 1 point for that. Oh. So, Harry, you have moved to 17 points.
Well, you could have given me 2.5.
We don't go half
one
points.
And a half.
Listen, Harry, you're going to love your point total when I get to the next two. All right. Carl Banks.
Yay.
Carl Banks said, run the ball 30 or more times or get 100 yards rushing.
Yeah.
They only had 20 rushes in the game, and they did not get close to 100 yards rushing. Carl, unfortunately for you, it is a goose egg.
Shutout for the first.
Goose egg for Carl. So his lead is down to 2. Roman?
5 points. 5 points.
No turnovers by the Giants offense. I count personally when you're wide open on a third down pass play and you drop the ball, that's like a turnover.
But it's okay as long as you do this after, right? If you do that, it makes it okay.
Well, pat yourself right now.
My bad.
League-leading goose egg.
My bad.
Got a league-leading goose egg. Right, you guys have your papers?
Yes. Okay. We have a question for us.
I have a question for you. What are the offensive markers that the Giants have to hit this week in order to be successful against the Seattle defense on the road? What are some of the markers you believe the Giants must hit? Banksy, you still have your lead, so you still have control of Chalice. Harry, throw that in there, famous 53.
There you go.
In
famous 58.
For the team to win the game, that is the operative phrase. So no matter what we say, the team will have to win.
Well, yeah, or at least make it a close game. Yeah. Your lead is dwindling, but you still get to keep the Chalice.
Great. Drink.
All right. We hope you had a little fun with us this week, and hopefully you learned some things along the way, getting you set for the Giants and the Seattle Seahawks. For Hall of Famer Harry Carson, Carl Banks, Roman Oben, and our entire crew, I'm Bob Papa. Thanks for joining us for this week's edition of Giants First and 10 here on MSG.